This week on RSBNB Update, we cover the rest of the Note on Front, including God banter, Slayer, canon upgrades, and big questions about the role each god will play going forward. Of course, there's also lore with the Note on themselves and the finale of Effigy Incubator. This is RSBNB Update, episode 841, recorded Thursday, August 5th, 2021. The Zaros Hipster. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. I've calmed down a bit since last week. I haven't gone back to Carapax since Sunday, but that's mainly because I've been busy. But nonetheless, of course, the guy that you've been wanting to hear from is back this week. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane. I'm feeling much better. No, I didn't get the Rona. Had a sore throat. Kind of lost my voice, but we are back. And if it was going to happen, if I went down, at least I went down on a week when you guys had plenty of star power. You had a lot of power on the panel.
We really did. We really did. And, you know, we carried that out into Saturday. We even got you a kill.
Yeah.
But that's a topic.
All respect to Thaxi. It was ugly. And I'll have something to say about that towards a little bit later this month.
Yeah, and a nice Informer article. But, of course, Carapax is only one part of the Note in Front. The second part is, of course, the Slayer and all the generals and everything going on there. And who better to discuss a little bit of lore than Questscaping? Welcome back to the show.
Hello, hello. Been absolutely getting sucked into the Note on Front. It's quite some good fun.
Yeah, and, you know, it of course, wouldn't be a modern RuneScape update without lore. So that is something we greatly appreciate, but it doesn't end with the Note on Front, because we're also going to discuss this week the finale of the Effigy Incubator, that storyline that's been drip, drip, drip for the last year, one chapter a month for the last 12 months. We're going to have a look into what the ultimate end ramifications of that were. And, you know, I think there's I don't think they were meant to be tied towards the Note on Front, but just with everything being Dragonkin themed around this time of year, it makes a lot of sense. So we're going to have a good, fun episode this week, despite there being no official RS update. Shows that RSBNB update knows how to have fun without RS updates. So, Tanis, you and I have known that since the very beginning, right?
Absolutely.
You just got to look at the behind-the-scenes banter and whatnot.
It's a matter of perspective, right?
Yeah, that's what we always say. That's what we always say, and that's what the gods say, too, getting into some of the discussion that happens. And, you know, one thing that many people didn't realize is that when you land inside the city of Sintistan for the first time after the quest, when it's our battlefield for what is becoming known as the Elder God Wars, there's a good deal of back and forth between the gods who are there from City of Sintistan talking about what their current job is. And from the looks of it, there's going to be new dialogue dropping each and every week. It takes them about 5 minutes to run through their dialogue, and it's text chat based, so it's something you can just kind of read along with and immerse yourself in when you get there. Questscaping, what'd you think of this when you walked into the city?
Yeah, it always feels a bit realer when you can sort of see them talking in the moment as it is, rather than just interacting whenever you interact. It feels like things go on without you having to be in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I also love the way that it just happens. Like, we weren't actually warned that it would be changing week by week.
Uh-huh.
We just walked into the first week of dialogue, and then I happened to be bossing with a friend around reset on Sunday, and we happened to pop into the citadel, the cathedral, and lo and behold, there was new dialogue. So we just sort of interrupted our boss trip to sit there and watch it all play out, and that was really quite fun.
Yeah, and you know, it definitely brings forward some new dynamics with all these characters, characters that following 2013's The World Wakes, really rose to prominence, all being featured in some of their own quests. And the dynamic here is that, you know, you can definitely feel that they are putting aside a lot of the feelings they have towards one another to get this job done. And I honestly think it speaks a lot of Asinadra for, well, Asinadra, but I guess it's us who brought them together in after City of Sintistan. But just the fact that the four of them would get together and do this, and looking at what they say, it's like, okay, perhaps everything is not as all rosy as we could see here. So, for example, Sarah Doman says, how long must we drain the egg's anima? Saren says, well, the Elder's followers maintain their onslaught. We stand here. Do not falter. Gilinor's fate is in our hand. Zamorak chimes in, and all the anima we can absorb. I could get used to this. Armadil says, don't get any ideas. The rest of us are doing the same. And how long will you handle it, little bird? And that's the dynamic at play among these people.
They're all physically together, but they're not quite... well, they can't quite make... They can't do anything to each other physically for the time being without endangering the entire universe, so they have to stick to the verbal for now. I think they were saying... I think one of the Dreamwoods said somewhere that it's like the gods being trapped in an elevator together.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know what happens if that elevator gets stuck? Everything kicks up another notch. And Saren says there are no others with the necessary endurance. And Armadil says, what about Asinadra? He's a god now. Sarah Doman says, true, he did teleport him here. But then Zamorak points out, because I guess amongst everybody else who is here, he is quote unquote the youngest. But he says he's a new god, and everybody said, and he says, you've all forgotten what that's like, because these guys could all stand here for hours upon hours for doing it. But he says Asinadra could only stand here for mere seconds before being incinerated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also demonstrating that, yes, they're all technically gods, and Asinadra has some level of power that's, you know, more than Ichlarin and whatnot, but he's definitely not on the same level as the types of, say, Armadil or Sarah Doman in this case.
Yeah. They used to have a more concrete tier list for the gods, but they've sort of backed away from that now. But even so, you can still get a sense of their being more powerful and less powerful, even if they're not about to go power leveling at all.
Yeah, and you know, this is ultimately something I think that players have been wanting, because the one thing, and Tanis, you can attest to this, is that you and I remember covering all these storylines leading up to this and the end of that Sliske's endgame stuff, right? How long it took to get there. Whereas now we're actually living in the moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, it's a lot better flow. I'm not going to say the word, even for the story. But I mean, even the threads that led up to in-game, was an improvement on the steps that led up to, I don't know, like the elf storyline, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been, I think they've been pretty consistently dialing in and speeding that up, because they can't do the, or they don't do just the one-off stories.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that, pulling back from it, I think players wanted for a long time. I'm going to move on to the second week right now on this one. I don't think there's anything else left on the first, except maybe... there's a bit of a talk about the about the staff. Armadil says, the fool, he has no concept of the staff's power, of course, talking about Carapac, and his aim is dreadful. Clearly, he hasn't noticed how it kicks when activated cold. And of course, Armadillo would know about that, because it is the stuff of armadillos, as we call it, of course. The Elder Gods do call it something else, but... moving on to week two, Sarah Doman complaining about being stuck here while his troops are out fighting without his guidance. And Saren acts as the reassuring force, saying that the commanders are more than competent. And any assistance that Sarah Doman could render would be pale next to theirs. And of course, she is talking about the likes of Commander Zilyana and Nex and whatnot, who are actually out on the battlefield.
It does make sense for Saren to be the one saying all this. She has willingly abandoned her followers before when she just blew herself up at the end of the God Wars. I think Sarah Doman had to be cast out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it raises that interesting question, doesn't it? Do you know what question I'm alluding to? Okay. It raises the question of what happens after this is all said and done, as to whether or not something like that will happen again. Because in terms of what I see here, this is, in effect, Saren getting the other gods ready for the fact that, oh, maybe we're not going to have the influence that we have right now for a long time. Perhaps you should get used to that, Sarah Doman.
Interesting. It's, I don't know, with the way the current story is moving, they are actually powering up from these Elder Eggs, and presumably the way we don't really have any reason to expect that they wouldn't be more powerful, then yeah, so maybe it's even more sparks going to be flying after this. But of course, we do on this podcast have the long-running idea of the gods maybe getting depowered and not quite as influential as ever before.
And I'm not 100% bound to that. Like, I'm willing to see something else happen, but I don't see the game moving to a simpler storyline without some of them at least getting depowered.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thoughts on it, at least. But
the
dialogue from this week gets even edgier. Zamorak is really seeming like he doesn't want to be there. He wants to just put his efforts elsewhere. And he says, and I quote, "Why not let the elder brats hatch, then kill them?"
Wow. Okay, Zamorak. He's baiting.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, oh, okay. Does he know something we don't about what'll happen if you do that? I don't know.
I think it's just bait.
Yeah, it could be. Because, you know, you got to have that in a storyline. But hey, if it's not, then that's something we can all point to going forward. Tanis, what did you think of Zamorak being so upfront with that?
I mean, is he wrong?
I know there are players who would like to see that happen.
Oh, Thaxi. Yes.
Thaxi does?
Well, Thaxi is all about the skilling boss, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. But that had a rather ominous pivot in terms of where the conversation went next, because Saren is trying to keep everybody peaceful. Armadillo agrees and wants everybody to stay on task. But it seems as though that Sarah Doman and Armadillo are in the dark here because, Zamorak says, you don't know, do you? Tell them, Saren. No secrets here. Saren says, it's no secret, but I do not wish to speak of it. Sarah Doman says, what does he mean, Saren? Tell us. I slew Ma on Frenisque. She was an elder god. She was also my mother. Sarah Doman, you slew an elder god? I can scarcely believe it. But going back to Sarah now, she was weak and in great pain. Armadillo now is picking up that mantle of sober second thought, saying, Lady Saren, to lose one's family in such a way, no words will ease your burden, but I am sorry. nonetheless. Saren reminds everybody that it was long overdue and it was a mercy killing. And in terms of answering how hard is it to kill an elder god, isn't that what you asked, Zamorak? She says, it's far harder than it would be to unmake you, slowly and feet first.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Then Zamorak says, well, should we survive, I'd like to see you try. And Saren says, dare to speak of mother again, and we shall see. Then Sarah Doman, and this is, I smiled when I saw this, Sarah Doman says, this may just end up being worthwhile after all.
Getting to sit back and watch the show.
So we got that, and that's only week two. We got presumably another 2 to 3 weeks before the next front arrives. I don't know if there's going to be new dialogue for each and every week, but lo and behold, there we are.
Mm-hmm.
Things are not all happy in paradise.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in this one, like the different ways that Sarah Doman and Armadale come at the idea of Saren having killed Mar. You've got Sarah Doman coming at from the strategic perspective that's like, oh, she can kill an elder god. This is something that she has done. And Armadale immediately focuses on the family aspect, yep, being the one who's more down to earth, ironically, for a bird.
Because remember, he was separated from his partner.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that.
Yeah. And it's quite, oof-oo, I will unmake you slowly and feet first.
Yeah.
All right, Saren.
And, you know, I honestly feel as though that everybody was getting juiced up for this when Battle of the Monolith began. But I think what we see here is some of the biggest dialogue between the gods that we've ever seen, and it's going to have a ramification.
Oh, yeah.
So I want everybody, I want everybody to bookmark this and come back to this once this is all said and done and see just what the heck ends up happening with this.
See what comes of the trash talk, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Generals, should we move on to the generals?
Well, Vex's questions here seem pretty fitting, don't they?
Yeah, I want to do the generals first, though, because I think we can rope that in, too. I talked to a few of them, but there are a couple of interesting things that did come up in there. If you talk to Commander Zilyana, she'll effectively say that once the players, you know, got the power of the God Swords, the generals pulled out of God Wars 1, God Wars Dungeon 1.
Yeah, so this feels like it's saying that God Wars Dungeon 1 is effectively over, in the same way that Azanadra's quest had God Wars Dungeon 2 effectively over. So essentially it's saying the PVM version of those dungeons is effectively a snapshot of its own
time.
Yeah,
it's a snapshot of how it used to be, kind of. Because they all pulled out and they were all leading the forces there. And for anybody listening to this after the fact, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to go and, you know, kill your spiritual mages or whatnot. You are still going to be able to do that. It's just that for story purpose, the generals are in Sintistan and their fighters are in Sintistan now as well. Which, I guess, when you put it this way, this could mean no more ever chance of having a remastered God Wars Dungeon 1? Question mark? Because I know that was something we talked about.
Guess I never realized they were the actual physical generals in the first place.
Yeah, Commander Zilyana. It's right there.
Well, yeah, but it almost feels like everything else is of spirit. Why wouldn't they be? Like, why isn't it like a residual haunting? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Okay, I see where you're going with that.
Yeah, like it's the energy of the what was going on there. Like that's, I don't know. I always thought that's kind of how it was. Guess not. But you could do that. You could put that twist on it for a remaster.
Yeah, you could. You're right. You could put that on that first spin. So I guess it doesn't have to be a hard no on that. And I'm just thinking back. It was actually August 2007 that we got God Wars 1. So what is that? 14 years ago, we got God Wars 1, and now we're getting God Wars 3 around the same time of year. So that's pretty interesting. If you talk to Kriara, there's an interesting message there about why is the sky green? Why is the sky green?
Kriara, of course, the bird is looking to the sky.
Right? He says, we're underground, are we not? But you ask him, can't you fly around and find out? He says, we are fighting to defend the world. I don't have time for flights of fancies. If we live through this, maybe.
Yeah, slightly more important things to focus on for the time being.
Oh, I totally enjoyed that line. Okay. Now, I didn't take much from Nexus Generals, but what did you take from Nexus Generals that rubbed you the wrong way?
Well, on one note, it's quite nice to be able to talk to them at all, because I don't think they've ever actually had dialogue.
Yeah, they were just previously things that you kill in the next fight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And naturally, this is a Mod Ramen update, the big old Nex fan.
Okay.
He gets to flesh that out a little bit more.
All right, fair enough.
So
fair
it enough. Is nice to have them fleshed out. But also, what I picked up on was Glacey's particular line that she feels something cold. It's cold and looms ever closer. I have not felt anything this cold before, at least not since Nex taught me how to wield the element itself. Death. Death is the only way I can describe this feeling. So, different takes on that. Some people saying
could that be when. Okay.
We do have that front coming up.
Right.
But also, there was that extremely ominous. When we were at Mars Egg in Azanadra's quest, talking about the feeling of cold, and it really seemed to point to Zautaka that time. And that instead of when. So, really don't know what this could be for the time being. Just have to wait and find out. But
could it just be something about the remnant shadowy stuff that we dealt with in the quest? Could it be potentially related to that? Just in the
entire
city?
Maybe, but we've got Umbra for that.
Okay. All right. Let's see, did they have anything to say that was of interest? Probably not. But shadow magic, very depth of shadows themselves. If only you could see the manner of creatures that claw hopelessly at you.
Thanks, Umbra.
You have only glimpsed a fraction of the potential shadow magic to think you're versed enough in the art of shadow magic to peer through those depths. Fear not, they can't reach you. Yet.
Just casually freaks us out there.
Yeah. And it doesn't have anything to do with Sliske at all, does it?
There were some people thinking that, but who knows?
Yeah.
We've got some shadow stuff going on, no matter what.
All right, fair enough. Go ahead, Tanis.
Did they all just kind of ditch Gorador? Like, is he down there like, hey, guys?
Yeah.
Everyone go?
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, nah, you don't have a god, dude. You got to stay here.
He's just sitting like, everyone's thrones in the... He's stomping all over their bases.
Yeah, that does feel like it's something that's left out. Is what do we do with the Bandos side in God Wars 1? Or
maybe
anything,
we'll see him
or anything Bandos related at all? Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Be like a free agent, right? I mean,
imagine if Grigorovich throws up or something.
Oh, that'd be something.
Whoa. I guess he already kind of has, because there was that mask and shadow glaive in Azanadra's quest.
Yep. Yeah, and we were kind of influenced, or making some inferences on that. But anyways, let's move on to Thaxi's questions then, because these all relate to the god banter and what's going on inside the city of Sintistan aside from Slayer. So Thaxi, who was on the show last week, writes, Saradomin sees Saren as powerful and wise and wants to depend on her. Armadil trusts her power as well, but both he and Zamorak feel that she has hardened herself in some way and seems wary and unsure about what she will do as the other God Wars unfold. Do you think the change they see in Saren is related to her role in Maw's death, or to some more immediate plan she isn't willing to share with the others, or something else entirely? So let's deal with this before moving on to number two, because we also got these vibes in the quest itself, didn't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saren is throwing up all the red flags right now.
And we thought it would be Azanadra doing that, but it's actually Saren herself who threw up all the red flags.
Yeah, I think because what we've got going on here is we're delaying the hatching of the Elder Gods, the new Elder Gods. But if that ever switches around to actually having to stop them from hatching, effectively killing them, that's where Saren will no longer be on board with the idea. She's got extreme hang-ups on family right now. She could not kill Zaras because she was family. She's so broken up about Maw's death because she was family in the weird, obscure Elder God way.
And with her being around the block before on all this, it really does raise the question, are her and Zaros somehow attuned to the Elder Gods that we don't know yet?
Mm-hmm.
Or that we're not aware of? Because if they are, he's conveniently disappeared for this. You got to wonder why. Whereas she is being all coy and, you know, ducking around and whatnot. Maybe there is something afoot in terms of how these two are relating, Saren and Zaros, how these two are relating to the Elder Gods.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if she did have something up her crystal sleeve.
Yeah.
I wonder if the change, the way in which she's hardened now, is coming from Battle of the Monolith, where she was made to stop Zaros and failed to do so and just ran away and hid.
Yeah.
Maybe she's.
But got I also resolve. Think it could be some kind of just outward influence from the remaining Elder Gods.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that, it raises lots of red flags. And, you know, I think in the dialogue we went through from the little bit here in the cathedral in weeks one and two, it just furthers those questions we had at the end of City of Sintistan, honestly.
Mm-hmm. She's someone to keep an eye on.
It's not a good thing. Go ahead, Tanis.
But, well, I was thinking, like, okay, what if you took it more down to, like, a human level? Which,
ooh.
I know, she's Saren. She's, like, number two in the hierarchy of things. But think about this, like, what if your parent was a monster? What if, like, ended up taking their life to defend yourself or your siblings? Think about that kind of guilt that she carries with her, and then was asked to do the same thing again to her brother, and then is now being asked again to do it, you know, possibly do it one last time. How long until she cracks? She is
right. Do you mean cracks, right? Or you mean literally, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking the same thing. Because I think one thing we're all forgetting in this is that she still loves her elves, and she won't let anything happen to them, right? Because I feel like ever since Desperate Measures, we've kind of forgot a bit about that, haven't we?
Yeah, she kind of went to focusing on everyone and everything instead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I hope that still exists, because if it doesn't, now hear me out on this, if it doesn't exist, we could be in a situation where she's not willing to, in effect, protect the world anymore if she doesn't care about the elves. I feel like it's so baked into her character, she has to, but I feel like we haven't really seen it much since before Desperate Measures.
Yeah, I'd be scared of a Saren with nothing to lose.
Right. And that's what I'm getting at here, is that there's a lot of these kind of things rumbling around, is that we don't want her at that state, but if she is, uh-oh. So, but to answer the question, I think Ma's death, definitely. But I also think it's some sort of influence. She's being influenced either directly or subconsciously by the Elder Gods. And I'd be willing to lean more on that than the Ma connection for myself, for that one. So, as for question two, or did you have something to add, Tanis?
No, I was going to say, I see, I'm the other way, and I lean more towards the emotional.
All right.
Yeah, I think I'm with Tanis there.
All right, fair enough. Now, for question two, this one's a throwback. 10 to 15 years ago, that was a long time ago, RuneScape really only had Ceridoman, Zamorak, and Gothics, who all directly represented classic fantasy archetypes of good, evil, and neutral. For the Lorehounds, there was also this more powerful but really mysterious empty lord. Obviously, the dynamic has changed drastically since then, but with the deaths of Bandos and Guthics, and the temporary absence or evolution of Zaros, it feels like that some of these archetypes are currently left unfilled. Fast forwarding to current events, talking with the gods in the cathedral, or in the Cathedral of Azenodra, they generally seem to view Saren as the most powerful among them, although somewhat mysterious, potentially untrustworthy. They describe Armadil as untested and maybe annoying, but they also all seem to respect him in their own ways. From my perspective, these descriptions seem to fit nicely with our old archetypes for Zaros and Guthics. Do you think that the lore team is trying to migrate the pantheon back towards simplicity, with a single primary deity for each type archetype of good, evil, neutral, and powerful slash mysterious? Is this just a natural, unplanned progression as the gods become more dynamic characters and respond to world-changing events? Or am I reading too much into these fairly brief dialogues? What are your thoughts?
I think it's more about the, well, the dynamic characters for the sake of everything that's been going on and everything that that does to change the dynamic between them.
All right.
Yeah. I do like the idea, though, of Armadil essentially being the neutral one to some extent, and Saren taking the role of strange and mysterious and unknowable because, well, certainly unknowable given the discussion we just had.
Right.
Yeah, it's changing the sort of appeal they have, I guess, in terms of how the players see them. And on a different note, I definitely see old Zarosians gravitating towards Azenadra instead. Like, he's pretty much just ascended to godhood, and there's already people who say, yep, he's my god now.
Interesting. I assume you mean players, or do you mean...
Yeah, just players.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. That's really interesting.
So, yeah,
you know, for me, I go back, and prior to the release of Desert Treasure, I was always really interested into the Zaros side of things. But for me, they honestly just made him too mainstream and relied on him too much. You can call me the original Zaros hipster if you want, but that's the way I see myself with this. And I think the whole reason that we have what we do in terms of the way the gods talk and act and whatnot really started to evolve, of course, after Guthix's death. And Jagex is on record of saying that they always had this in mind, that Ceridoman and Zamorak in particular were more than just good versus evil. And they wish they could have expanded on that before World Event 1, and a lot of people would have probably had a different allegiance during that event, in terms of how sided it was towards Ceridoman's side. But it wasn't until, of course, Dishonor Among Thieves that we learned more that Zamorak isn't necessarily 100% slanted against evil. He is slanted towards chaos in order to prevent stagnation, because, as we all know, all stagnant empires will die. And that's the way he sees things. But at the same time, now this is going to look weird looking at it from a different perspective, I just took the quintessential way that RuneScape lore has been looked at for the last 8 years or so. But if you look at any other major story franchise out there, what do you got? You got your good, your evil, your neutral, and sometimes you're downright mysterious. And you can look to many, many different franchises to see that. And based on the way some of this stuff has gone recently, in terms of just some of the tropes they've relied on, I wouldn't be surprised if they wanted to go back to something a little bit more simpler that everybody could just see, you know, right on the tin.
Marketable, dare I say.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I don't think this... I don't think there is a plan. I think it is a result of elaborate, you know, the way that they have began to flush out the gods.
Yeah.
And I actually think that started before Dishonor Amongst Thieves with Death of Chivalry. That's where you start to be like, oh, there's another side to Sarah Doman and all this. And I'm okay with that because I think the Pantheon is just, it's kind of big. And any way that they can do that without willy-nilly killing gods off, it's good. I'm not a fan of that at all, because it makes, if you can kill a god off like they do, then you could kill off any god, and it's bad. It's like if it was wrestling, this would be bad for business. You know what I mean? Like, like, no. But I don't think it was planned. I just think that now they're like, they see it and they're like, oh, well, we can get all the same, we can cover all the same angles and make the characters more richer without having 16 different gods.
But at the same time, they can all stand for the core main elements that Thaxi has pointed out while doing
that. Right. Yeah.
I'd say there's different ways to approach this. You've got perhaps the D&D alignment approach as an example. We've got, this is chaotic good, neutral good, lawful evil, or whatever. And then you've got the sort of historical pantheons, like Greek gods, Roman gods, Viking gods, whatever. We've got these characters who have so much centuries of history and many, many stories where they do so many things and just infinite connotations all building up on each other. And I think, yeah, it's a bit of both, where you can simplify them down to certain elements they might be associated with, but they've also got so much going on that's just built up over time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And, you know, I think that anybody listening to this has been around for a little bit and is probably going to want something a little bit more than, you know, just the basic good, neutral, evil kind of thing / mysterious, because we are questers, we are lore players, and after all, this is a podcast about RuneScape. But at the same time, anybody who has started playing recently and is just learning about this and takes a stroll into the cathedral and reads the text that's on display has a simple way of understanding everyone that can pivot nicely into the more finer grained attributes. So, as much as we'd like to say there's a huge change coming, I actually don't think it's a huge change. I think that they're just marketing it slightly differently for people who are experiencing these characters for the first time.
They're solidifying things.
Yeah, they're solidifying things, but at the same time, if you dig down deep enough, their core elements, as have been established, aren't just being thrown out the window and being made simpler. It's all still there. You just got to go a little bit deeper below the surface. Because if you look at what was assigned for these guys, if you look at the good Sarah Doman, you can see what he wants to do is good. You can look at Zamorak's like for chaos is particularly evil. You can look at the way that Armadil handled himself in this dialogue as neutral. And everything that Saren has said, well, that's a little bit mysterious. So it all fits in the tin nicely, I think. And I think it's good marketing. So.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if I have my choice, I like my gods simple and my humans complicated. Right? I mean, that's where you can really put the intrigue and the... They're good, but but they got a mean streak, or, you know, oh, that's an evil SOB, but he sends his mom Christmas, or, you know, a Christmas card, or calls her his kid on his birthday. I don't know. But gods aren't supposed to have, like, redeeming qualities like that, you know what I mean? Like, or at least in my head, they don't.
That's a shift in RuneScape over time, hasn't it, Bean? Yeah. Gods as gods versus gods as characters.
Yes.
Very true point.
Very good way of putting it.
Very true point. All right. You know, I initially put this later in the show, but I moved it up because, I mean, it's lore, so let's just dive into this right now. For killing Nodon front Slayer creatures, there's a chance at dropping Nerissa's Journal, which is a Master Quest Cape requirement. It will become guaranteed after killing 1,600 Nodon if you don't get it beforehand. The Lorehound does help in its drop rate. There are some hot fixes around that on the first week of launch, but most of that should be in place right now. But this is a book that you can get, and then you can bring it back to Nerissa, who is, I believe, in the southwest part of the city, if I remember. The southwest part of the front, if I remember correctly. And you'll get a nice little chunk of dialogue and an achievement for doing that. But as it turns out, this journal is a accounting of what it is like for a Nodon to be brought to the city of Sintistan to fight, except this particular Nodon in question kind of escaped the curse, it seems. She says, "My lucidity fades in and out. I'm struggling to stay completely in control, but my waking moments are becoming less and less fleeting by the day. I could tell as soon as I woke that there's a clear difference between thinking you're awake in a dream and actually being awake, because, of course, remember, these are the ones who slept off the curse. You're conscious, aware of your surroundings, and it's refreshingly sober, sentient control over your own actions." Then she goes into talking about the glorious city, and this is not the luscious foliage that I'm used to, but the architectural skill does surprisingly compare. We trained Nodon for years, specializing in designing and constructing. As such, we were primarily the ones to build up Orthon, houses, temples, laboratories, to build a home we're proud of. And we knew about this before, right, from archaeology and Desperate Measures. So this is just expanding on that a little bit from there. The journal goes on and continues, talks about the other creeds and wondering if they're still alive and out there about what could be happening. And near the end, she writes, "I keep writing unknown year, which I realize is not very helpful. I haven't the faintest idea what time period we're in. Were we sleeping for a decade, a century, a millennium? Longer. I've been quietly studying the city, trying to get a glimpse at the dusty tomes scattered around whenever our superiors aren't looking, to at least attempt to have some idea. So far, no luck. It's been 13 days now, at least what I can assume from this feeble attempt to keep track of time. No one else, from what I can tell, has any ounce of awareness, and so I must go. I'm sorry, my brothers and sisters, you are not deserving of this fate." So it's just a little bit of extra lore on the side about a dragonkin that Karapak hasn't seemingly successfully bound, like he's bound the rest of the Nodon.
I'm not entirely sure what the deal with the Nodon there is. Well, Desperate Measures did make it seem like they are bound to Jazz now, but
yeah,
clearly it's not as strong as it used to be, since Nerissa can just sort of wake up out of it.
Well, it was Karapak who chose the Nodon to serve as the army for this. It wasn't necessarily Jazz now, was it?
At the ending of Desperate Measures, though, Jazz does say Karapak is bound, as are the sleeping Nodon. So that was something very specific there. But yeah, it definitely seems like a different deal from the old curse. But suffice to say, Nerissa was sleepwalking, she's woken up, and that really makes her a rather interesting character to have here. She's saying she has no idea how long she was sleeping, a decade, a century, a millennium, nope, longer than all of those by a good deal. It's like, 60,000 years, I think, is the figure they tend to give. And so, yeah, we've got this character who is extremely time displaced, who remembers all the events of Orthon as if they were yesterday. And that's really quite a fascinating perspective to have. She has quite a bit of dialogue if you just go into her house and chat to her. And she's a really rather sweet character, too.
Yeah, yeah. What I was wondering is, could we maybe learn more about this in the microsite, the archaeology microsite that's on the way?
Interesting. I'd been led to believe that that was just Centistan, but it could very well be, well...
Yeah, I guess that wouldn't necessarily count because it's not ancient history that we do with archaeology.
Yeah, it's just there now.
So...
Or maybe Naressa could be the dig site manager, maybe. She's got a job now.
Yeah, and the question is, do you even need a dig site manager for a microsite? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Oh, I want to do more archaeology and play that skill.
Same.
So good.
Oh,
so
good. Well, you can help me, Shane. I can't. I keep getting zapped in my wingsuit, and I can't get my artifact.
Yeah, what's the fix to that? We'll deal with that after.
Okay.
Yeah, but remember, it's double XP, Tanis. Remember your flow state relic.
Yeah, I need help.
Okay.
I'm getting zapped. I can't get the part that goes to it.
All right, we'll sort that out after the show because I think we have a solution for that. But with this, we don't know what the drop rates are, but apparently... it is increased with the Larhound, but how do you guys feel about the lore being locked behind Slayer creatures rather than Karapak himself? And it's
honestly
got that 1600 note on threshold if you don't get it.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that for sure. But yeah, it's Karapak has enough on him already. He's the pure PVM challenge here, and he gets pure PVM drops. Whereas, I guess for the nature of what this lore is, it makes more sense to drop from a Nodon, because she is one of the Nodon. Yeah, it also reminds me of the ancient elven wedding ring in a few senses. Like, first of all, being...
How do you feel about that one, Tanis?
Hey, I didn't have a problem with the ring.
Okay.
The ring was
nice.
Yeah, it was all them little crystal shards I had to collect.
But for both of them, like lore-wise, they are lore drops gated behind creatures who I don't want to kill. Because you chat to Naressa, you get empathy for the Nodon out here.
Right.
And yeah, you feel bad about killing them. For the spirit of the lore, it feels like it's actually kind of wrong to be killing these characters, but you gotta for your Master Quest cape, hey?
Yeah. See, it really didn't bother me that much, but I can understand how for someone is 100% invested in their character, it would. So, all right. We're going to talk about those Nodon right up next, but before we do that, I'll just thank some Patreon supporters for making this episode possible, and the monthly bit that's going to be released next week and recorded next week about the first-time user experience of RuneScape. This is a new topic. We're effectively taking our mobile monthly bit from a couple months ago. Or was that last month? I don't know. Time is weird in this day and age. But we're going to be taking that and focusing in precisely on what the first-time user experience looks like for somebody who's just starting to play RuneScape. Somebody who sees an Elder God Wars advert and says, oh, I want to play that. Let's dive in and talk about how RuneScape works for somebody who's brand new. We're going to be talking about that next week. That'll be the August monthly bit that'll be made available to Patreon supporters, including people like Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., Kristen S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Guy Lafleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jim M., Keski, Kevin G., Lucky Ducky, Malinoric, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Rastifa, Ren Hawk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stubbeve, Tanner JW, The Bears OP, Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, all of you, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And, oh, I forgot Vinny's name at the end. Thank you, Vinny. It truly does mean the world to us on there. And if you want to learn more about this, just check us out at patreon.com/rsbnp. There, for as little as a dollar a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. If you want to go up a tier to $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, like these people did. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. You can learn more about all this at patreon.com/rsbnp. We are, of course, working towards that goal where we will do a special Patreon mail out and some kind of special event. We're working on that behind the scenes. We'll have more details soon, but you can expect a postcard with that. And should we ever reach $500 a month, Tannis and I will subject ourselves to the Hot Ones Challenge with a huge range of spicy chicken wings and bites. That's going to be videotaped. So if you like this or you just want to support the podcast, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone. Looking forward to that?
No.
Well, hopefully we'll get there one day. I hope we will. It'll be worth a good cause.
It would be.
All right. So, not only do we have Slayer creatures here, but that little button that we get in the attack, or in the Karapak fight, Time Warp, also exists inside the battlefield. There are four battlefield abilities that you can use, one from each of the commanders. Kriara's is Swiftness of the Aviancy, which channels the Aviancy Kin and gains a 10% damage increase for a short duration, which is 18 seconds. There's a 60-second cooldown on this one. Commander Zilyana's is the Light of Ceridoman, which shields yourself from 50% of incoming damage for 18 seconds. Once again, a 60-second cooldown. Next is, and this is my favorite, which is Blood Siphon. Siphons life directly from your target to heal yourself for 25% of the target's maximum health over 6 hits. This has a 120-second cooldown. And Kirill's is the Kirill Smash, which smashes your target with a large attack for 75% of your current weapon's damage type. 150-second cooldown on this one. Which one's your guy's favorite?
I've been having a lot of fun with Kirill Smash, but also I haven't really tried much of the other ones. I do enjoy it quite a lot, just being able to go, yarr, like he always did.
Yeah.
And just doing a nice little massive chunk of damage there. I find it useful on the Nodon Engineers when they show up, because it is really nice to get a good portion of that significantly larger HP out of the way.
And I found with Blood Siphon that I don't need food because I can just use Soul Split and maybe bring a few small token food items, but every 2 minutes I can just use this and heal up and deal a nice spike of damage.
Ooh.
So I like that one. Tannis, which one would you like? I know you haven't been down there to fight the things yet.
No, I'm looking forward to the Smash. That seems to be all the rage. That's what I want to do. And probably for the same reason that Westcaping's talking about. From everything that I've seen and the little bit of experience I've had, these remind me of almost a combination between Aerith's and Glaker's. You know, because they have specials like the Aerith's do, but they're kind of telegraphed. But with that chance of, spawning essentially like what was the, what do they call that Glaker that you had to kill?
The little glaciates.
At the end. Yeah, glaciates. Yeah. I don't know. It reminds me of those two kind of put together because it's less difficult than those mini boss slayer creatures that we got.
Yeah.
But I think a step above probably what we got in Sylphenheim.
Yeah. I still haven't mastered Rippers.
Yeah, well, me neither.
David's like, oh, I'll just go out there and AFK some Ripper Demons.
Yeah, I'll just do defense abilities on the cannon and tread zone.
That's interesting you mentioned cannons, because that's also one of the key drops from the Nodon Slayer creatures. Upgrades for the Dwarf Multicannon, the Kinetic Cyclone, and the Uldak Coil. Interestingly enough, the Kinetic Cyclone and Uldak Coil damage only boost the damage by 50%. Whereas apparently the Dwarf Multicannon ones has its damage doubled.
Yeah, the cannon was the oldest one, yeah. And the Kinetic Cyclone and Uldak Coil were, I think, basically meant to be upgrades with invention. Okay. But I think this puts them all on the same tier again.
Okay, that would make sense. But
and you do
like
need
the one
ammo,
that,
right?
Yeah, they all take cannonballs, but that's not
but
a problem.
Yeah, the Nodon drop cannonballs like nothing, though.
Yeah. And Karapak drops cannonballs, too.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Kinetic Cyclone one, sold for about 5.5 mil. Apparently, when I got that one, the multi-cannon ones were selling for around 35 mil.
Woof! I got Cyclone about the same price then.
Okay. And, you know, there's one person I know who's going to be absolutely all over these, and that's Alex43 with his cannons. He absolutely loves that stuff. So, I think that, and see, this is one thing I don't think I got to talk about last week when we did this, is that even if you're not fighting Karapak, there's something here for you in these Slayer creatures, if you have 92 Slayer and the drops. Just did a quick price check currently. Apparently, the Kinetic Cyclone kit is selling at this point for anywhere between 600K and 1.25 mil.
Oof.
Uldak Coil, 31.2 to 32. And the Dwarf Multicannon, 27 to 28 mil.
Hmm. Oh, because the Uldak Coil is the one people use most often.
Yeah. And, I mean, does anybody really want a melee based cannon? I don't think so. And I think that's why it's the way it is. So you have a number of creatures down there that you can fight. You have the Nodon Artificer, the Nodon Enforcer, and the Nodon Guard. And they each use a different combat type. The Artificer is, of course, magic. The Nodon the Nodon Enforcer is melee, and the Nodon Guard is ranged. And with that, you can tailor your own combat type to however you feel would work well on that. Though, do they? That's what I read into it. Though, apparently, oh no. Never mind. They are susceptible to Dragonbane. We didn't talk about that previously, that just wanted to use ranged, you could just use Dragonbane stuff against them. So that's
the old classic.
The old classic, because they have that Dragonkin in their name, so that would work. And then, every so often, a Nodon Engineer will pop up, and this is one that has no specific weakness to it. Apparently has a bit of a better drop rate on the cannon parts, if that's to be true in terms of what I've been hearing. I don't know if that's actually the case, because we don't have any Jagex confirmation about that. But because these are higher level, they do have a different drop table. Drop table on the engineers, they drop your supersets, super strength, super magic, super ranged. They drop some herb seeds, magic logs, uncut dragon stones, cannonballs, and a rare chance to drop Hydrix bolt tips. So there's that too. Lots of Hydrix bolt tips dropping in this dungeon. Now, as for one of the regular ones, they each drop a specific potion of that type. So, for example, the Artificers drop super magics. They drop fire battle staves. They still drop those herb seeds as well, or calcite stone spirits, chance of dropping dragon stones, magic logs, tuna potatoes, Hydrix bolt tips. To me, I don't know. This looks like a pretty decent Slayer drop table, honestly.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And they're not, like you said, Tanis, they're not at the point where you need to go all out like for the wyverns or rippers or camels, right? But right. they're one step below that, still fitting in that Slayer category.
Yeah, well, I mean, remember when Aerith first hit?
Yeah.
And
they were hard.
Right. You had to use the Fury at the right time. This kind of reminds me of it.
All right. See, I didn't really feel that. I just DPS'd it down, and I didn't really have much of a problem.
Mm-hmm. I've been bringing my regular unupgraded cannon, just sort of putting it out of the way of the siege engines, letting it go for a bit, and yeah, just all diving right. back.
That's good to know cannons work in that area.
Very fitting.
Yeah. Though, I wonder, does this get assigned as Nodon creatures, or what? Does this fall under for a Slayer task?
This is Nodon Dragonkin, apparently, and Kerepak falls under that too, even if he's not technically a Nodon.
Apparently, according to the wiki, they also fall under dragons.
I've heard mixed things about that, but I guess if the wiki says so.
Yeah, and I mean, the wiki's had, you know, at this point almost 2 weeks to get it right or get it wrong, so I'd at this point be more likely to believe them than not. I should tune my Slayer list for double XP. I'm going to do that after we're done here.
There you go, Shane.
Yeah, don't get any ideas on this, Tanis.
What, you want me to come with you? I'll do some co-op with you.
No, I don't like co-op.
Oh, well, like fine. Co-op. Then you can go do it on your
own. No.
I don't need you, Shane.
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm 1-1.
Yeah.
I mean...
All right. Nice.
You mentioned siege engines. Siege engines are another thing that you can kill. These are cannons that are around, and I think this is the first time we've had a piece of equipment that could be killed for Slayer. Because if you get Nodon Dragonkin, you can kill siege engines.
That's fun.
These have 30,000 life points associated with them. They drop siege engine parts, and if you have... enough siege engine parts, 30 of them, you can sabotage it so that when a Nodon grunt appears, it will go boom and kill that Nodon grunt, and you'll get the drops from that grunt. So this is
that's probably where the kill comes from.
Yeah, that's where that kill comes from on that. Probably from doing that. And, you know, I think that's a good way of looking at it.
So you can actually get the journal through these as well, it looks like.
That's absolutely amusing that you can do that.
I love the siege engines, though.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we were wondering what we would need the construction level for in this. And obviously this is the answer. Siege engines and siege engine parts and being able to sabotage and repair. Because in addition to the sabotaged ones, you do also have the ability to go out there and use your... siege engine parts to repair other siege engines as well, in addition to the sabotage, which kills the Nodon grunt. When you repair a siege engine, you use your 30 siege engine parts on it, but after that, if you have another 30 parts, you can take command of the siege engine and turn it against the Dragonkin in here. And this was a huge thing that they talked about when they were building up hype for this update. Was anybody else let down by this?
Really? Let down, huh?
Yeah.
How so?
I don't know. It just felt like... Okay.
Popcorn fart.
What?
It was a popcorn fart.
What does that mean?
Just a little pop.
Oh, okay.
What a phrase. I honestly enjoyed it.
Okay, I don't know. Perhaps it was different than what I was expecting. Because I mean, what can you do with the RuneScape engine, right? You can take control of something, but it's not like you're gonna go sit on the cannon and aim it and pull the trigger, so to speak.
Wanted something sort of more first person.
Yeah, I was thinking it might be something a little bit more because effectively, all that happens when you do this is your character goes into a position where your camera changes, you click on the cannon, and your backpack becomes unavailable, and then you can just click on any of the dragonkin all around and attack.
But no interface like you might have been expecting.
No specific interface or anything. And each time you hit that, it deals some damage. I helped somebody get a kill. I don't know if they appreciated that or not. I don't know. Perhaps I was just oversold on it. But
fair enough.
It did good work on the Nodon Engineer, so that was there.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a new mechanic. We'll give the team credit for that.
Mm-hmm. I find it honestly really rather satisfying watching the JMod stream of it. Modram was talking about hypothetically saving up all his Siege Engine parts for one task and just going absolutely ham, cannoning every single last one of them. It is honestly really rather fun to just be able to go click, 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 click,
yeah.
Boom.
And it's worth noting that the Siege Engine parts aren't actually sellable.
Yes. So that's got to be your own work, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to gather
how
those.
How would you procure parts to begin with?
Kill
they
Nodon.
Just drops.
Begin sabotage.
Kill Nodon.
Kill Nodon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not uncommon, but I'd say you need about 10 for a single kill.
Yeah, so, around there, yeah. Around there.
10 Nodon kills,
and it takes about 30. It takes 30 exactly to command or sabotage one. So you're probably better off commanding in that case. So, you know, I wasn't 100% sold on this, but you know, this was coming off the high of killing Karapak, I guess. So maybe I do need to go back and have another look. It's a new Slayer mechanic nonetheless, and fingers crossed that I wish we had a mask to assign ourselves these. That would be fun. That would be fun. So,
next week on Treasure Hunter.
Oh, don't give them any ideas.
What's the 8-mil flow?
I did that once, and I never expected it would come from you, giving an idea like that. So. All right. I think that's pretty much it for the front. I don't think there's much else to talk about in terms of the drops from the Nodon creatures. We covered the bulk of it. Lots of cannonballs. Lots of orichalcite stuff. So overall, I think that everything that we delivered with the Nodon front has lived up to it. And having experienced it myself now for about 10 days, I have to say that they made the right decision in releasing it one front at a time. I couldn't imagine handling three additional fronts on top of this. So I'm pleased with the way it was done.
Absolutely.
Tanis, any further thoughts?
No.
All right.
I think we covered it pretty well.
All righty. Well, there is also one other piece of news this month that we need to go through. And, you know, this month ended the year-long run of the Effigy Incubator. That game, minigame, came out after Desperate Measures, and we were said, hey, go here at the start of each month, and you'll get a little chunk of lore, and lo and behold, we got that now, and it is complete. I know you did was that you or Alaska? I think you were there for that,
but
you were there
yeah.
for it, right? The stream
yes, I was.
On this, how did that go? You guys enjoy it?
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
It's
so nice to just be able to relive it and finally, for the first time, experience it as a complete piece of content.
Exactly. That's what I found as well with this. And for anybody who hasn't been doing this, go do it. It's a fun story, and you get some effigies along the way that'll aid you in your training and some skills. And in preparation for this episode, I went back and I read through the transcript of all the different chapters here, and you know it started off fairly ordinary, I think, just kind of filling in some gaps about Vic and how do we pronounce that name,
Vic and Vicendithas.
Vicendithas, boy, that's dragonkin names are hard to pronounce. It starts filling in the gap about Vicendithas and the relation to Karapak and whatnot, because we know at the end of Desperate Measures what happened to him, and now we're reliving that all in front one, the note on front. And in going through this, I picked up on some key points here that I picked up on, you know, initially going through, but reading them back to back, it just has so much more impact. In particular, the transition between chapters 5 and 6, where Vic and Vasindathas first learns about something called Project Phoenix, but at the start of chapter 6, learns out that the truth behind Project Phoenix is that he is Project Phoenix, and that's why his father, Carapac, considered it a failure.
Woohoo! Family issues.
And I think I brought this one up on the show as being kind of harsh when it first dropped, and this was the one where it talked about creating clones of Carapac, and his goal was to litter the world with Carapacs. They say, of course, most died, and in his memories, I see myself burning again and again as he lowers malformed corpses of myself into the magma. Some survived only to die later. There's the harsh bit right there.
Yeah.
And he begins to question, do I even have a soul? Because I've been copied so many times, and each time my father is too indifferent to give me a different name. And I am nothing more than a failed lab experiment.
And Carapac, not one for names. Hey?
No, and that's the harsh bit in Chapter 6. But Chapter 9 also stood out to me, which would have been 3 months ago at this point, talking about one of the test subjects, because he headed off to Aiea, which is the Dragonkin or Illyjonkin homeworld, and the serum that he gave her had an unintended consequence that rather than improving her ability to absorb anima, which is how they survive and feast, it poisoned her blood. And he makes the point that his test subject, Atulia, must have been in such pain, but she never showed it, and she didn't want the others to get frightened or the experiment to stop. And with this, Vasindathas says, her death was not for naught. Whilst tragic, she has highlighted the elements that will cause more harm than good and the deadly variables to reduce as a result. And here you see overall the project moving forward and you kind of foreshadowing now that we see it what the ultimate end goal is, but not before. In Chapter 10, Vasindathas has a visit from Carapac, and this is, of course, after he's been rebound by Jazz. His eyes were wild and frightened, mixed with a terrible fury. He hates what has become of him, and he dreads it. And this is at the point where I started getting worried a number of months ago, me, Shane here talking, that in this chapter, he says, be wary of the Elder Gods. It is not their power that makes them frightening, but their utter disregard for sapient life. They are not like us, they do not think like us, and they do not consider us in their machinations. You are never working for them, you're never working with them, you are only ever working for them. And I wanted to bring this back up to Thaxi's question, because looking back on this, this is part of that Saren red flag.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, right?
Yeah. If she considers them family and...
Yep.
Yeah, what does that say about
exactly.
her?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why we need to pay attention to all sources of lore on this one.
Because they are really... Even if it seems unrelated in terms of the content, it is... I do think a lot of what is coming out at the moment is really thematically linked.
Exactly. It's all tied to... Like, we say it's tied together, but what you experience in Effigy Incubator isn't going to help you defeat Carapac in the Note on Front, but it is going to teach you about the Dragonkin and the Elder Gods
help.
Of what's happening behind the scenes. It might help you understand some of the things Saren says or Carapac says or even an Elder God says.
It's that extra bit of context, the holistic sense of understanding the lore.
Precisely, precisely. And then we get to Chapter 12, which was the brand new chapter that completed this entire arc after a year. And this one begins by saying, "The first Ilyushankin eggs have been laid on Gilinor in decades, and they are laid by my test subjects. It will be years before we can determine if my experiments were a true success. We may simply be suffering the whimsical vagaries of fate, but this clutch contained one more egg than normal, or so I am told. Perhaps, just perhaps, we're onto something. It's not a cure, of course. There's more to be done. Years and years of study and investigation before we can be sure, but it's a start. They have promised that the egg should hatch. They will name a child after me. I have told them not to. My name was chosen by my father. He carried it through all the other versions of me. It is petty, but I want this victory to carry nothing of his. Nothing. Instead, I ask that they name them Atoya in honor of the Ilyushankin who sacrificed herself for her people. Much more fitting, I think. My friend and I don't think myself at fault for thinking of you as such. We have potentially changed the destiny of an entire species, but my work here is done. I shall remain to assist you with this device. I sense that there's more you can still gain from it. But now I must turn my research away from the ashes of my father's knowledge. I shall reclaim my own destiny and step out of my father's shadow. Who knows? Perhaps in time it shall be he who stands trapped in mine."
That was a really rather sweet ending, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, with the potentiality of these Elder God eggs hatching at some point in the future, or sorry, not Elder God eggs, Dragonkin eggs.
Ilyushankin eggs.
Yeah, sure. Could this be in any way linked to the fallout of the Elder God Wars? Something that the Dragonkin will have to do with the hatched Elder Gods. Because I think we have to assume that the eggs are either going to hatch, the Elder God eggs, that is, they're either going to hatch or they're either going to get destroyed. And perhaps there's going to be some tie-in with these Ilyushankin eggs.
It's quite interesting to be talking so hopefully about the future here when, on the other hand, you are fighting in the Elder God Wars dungeon for the sake of even having a future in the first place.
Right?
Mm-hmm. How much of a future are we going to have? Are these eggs even going to make it? I mean, naturally, RuneScape is going to continue existing, but yeah, how well are things going to go?
Right, and my big question coming out of this is that maybe because the Dragonkin, as we know them, are creatures of the last revision, maybe there's something that these young Dragonkin, Ilyushankin, can do to aid us along. But they say years, but who knows? There could be some way of speeding that up, perhaps?
I think you're kind of getting the Dragonkin and the Ilyushankin mixed up a bit there.
Oh? Aren't the Ilyushankin
or the Dragon Riders?
Oh, oops. Yeah. Very good point. Well, everything I'm referring to is Ilyushankin then.
Mm-hmm. And well, the Ilyushankin aren't the creatures of the past revision, though.
No,
it's just a Dragonkin then.
Yeah, but there's got to be some sort of link between that, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's that's been an ongoing thing, like with Vindicta and Hanibus, and there have been incoming Ilyushankin colonists. I think they are going to be more of a force on Gilinor. There's, even in the cute little Valentine's quest, Heartstealer, you had an incoming Ilyushankin colonist just casually there, casually talking about what was going on. And I think that's just the start of things. There's going to be more of them hanging around, being another faction, I suppose.
Could these new Ilyushankin help in breaking the curse at some point, years in the future, of the Nodon?
That
could be the link.
I was just thinking.
Yeah, I think it would sort of come around, because Karapak was originally studying the Ilyushankin to break the curse, but Vesendathas was studying them for the sake of helping them, and
helping,
I guess it would be kind of nice and, yeah, it would be nice and karmic if by his sheer goodwill, he actually manages to help the Dragonkin out anyway. Essentially reaches Kerepak's original goal by being genuinely nice and altruistic.
Because, yeah, and it'll be... I bet it has something to do with... If the eggs don't hatch and they're killed, then Jazz will go...
Which eggs?
Nutty. The Elder Gods.
Okay, the Elder
Gods. There's
God
too
eggs.
Many eggs.
Yeah, there's too many and eggs then, we're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
Right? Too many eggs for one basket. And then when she goes nutty, the Illagonquin...
Illagonquin. Will,
Illagonquin, yeah. Did I just turn him into North American native? Yeah, I think
oh,
I
boy.
Did. Anyway. but no, like, because of their connection, because of the way that they communicate with Dragon, I bet they can break the curse, but I bet Jazz might have to be out of the picture, or at least...
Right.
And incapacitated in some way, which maybe killing these eggs will incapacitate the Elder Gods themselves.
I like your idea, though, the way that Illyug can communicate with dragons. I guess that very well could extend to the Dragonkin. It's like, hey, snap out of it.
Yeah, and that kind of is the direction I was going to with that. But 2 points on this one. It will be years before we can determine if my experience were a success. And therein lies the problem. How many years do we want to wait for this in RuneScape storyline? Right?
The Illyanka sadly do not grow up fast enough for the update cycle.
Well, I mean, after all the fronts are done, we could presumably have World Guardian gain access to the needle and, you know...
Just time travel these eggs.
Time travel these eggs forward, pull them out of the future and bring them back, kind of like was done with Anachronia, perhaps. Though that might be a bit of a cop-out. But and see, that's the thing. I don't think this would be written unless they were designed to come to fruition in the future at some point, to be used at some point in the future, right?
I mean, well, yeah, because, I mean, it's not like Jagex ever starts a story and doesn't pay it off. Like, that doesn't happen. Ever.
Oh, we're gonna be doing this podcast 10 years from now, and we're finally gonna find out what happened with Maud Raven's Illyanken eggs.
Guys, looking forward to Alphazandra?
Ah, the other forbidden thing you're not allowed to name. I don't know. Overall, I really enjoyed this the lore that came from Effigy Incubator. You could definitely feel Maud Raven inside of it in terms of some of the harsher chapters that I pointed out and just how, you know, we were kind of on the edge of what he has been told in the past is acceptable in terms of Atoya being poisoned by one of the experiments and dying painfully. That's a very Maud Raven thing, I think. But overall, I feel like it ended in a pretty good way. And recall, this is my last point on this, that this was the first thing that they put in that was in effect weaving story through everything last year. This is the beginning of that endeavor. And I think it's paid off very, very well.
It's been a genuinely wonderful bit of content to have just repeatedly giving and giving.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I was going for the lore each month rather than the effigies.
Same here. I haven't actually used many of my effigies,
same.
If any.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I forgot about the incubator.
Well, you're going to be you're going to be a number of months off if you ever want to go get
a
master quest.
But well, yeah. But I'll say this: I didn't really get. I mean, I experienced this story through the wiki by listening to it. On the phone.
Right.
I think if I would have been doing that every month...
You wouldn't have been able to read it as easily.
And I probably would have been Johnny on the spot.
Right.
Whenever it turned open. So,
and that's a big testament to the wiki team as well for providing transcripts for all this stuff, because it makes it easier for people like you who need a screen reader to... read content at length and just makes it so much more accessible, right?
In plain text.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I actually do like story, like, and I like RuneScape story. I really do. I just struggle with getting it.
Yeah.
And so when the transcripts are up like this, it's awesome because I didn't realize how much how rich just this little piece of content actually was. I really enjoyed reading it. Like it was a really good little story.
Mm-hmm. It's all complete. Your turn to jump in.
Yep, and that's what we also do here at the podcast. For anybody who wants to get the lowdown on anything week to week, we provide that. Whether it was last week's combat stuff or this week's general discussion about the note on front, it's something that we're happy to provide. So hopefully everybody enjoyed this, and we'll be back next week for the Ninja Strike following this. We also have an archaeology microsite coming this month before the second front. So it's going to be a fun month, I think. But let's do some picks of the week before we wrap this show up and do some achievements. The Calm Before the Storm double XP edition of achievements, I'll say. So my pick of the week is a YouTube video, and I don't normally share music videos. I don't. But this is something that the Star Trek Online folks provided and produced. And it is a Klingon heavy metal music video, believe it or not. And the song itself is sung by the actor who played Chancellor Laurel in Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Online. So let's give that a bit of a listen, then you guys can have a quick comment. That's called Steel and Flame, Star Trek Online's first ever music video showing that Klingon heavy metal can indeed be a thing. What do you guys think?
I love it. No.
And that feels like you're stereotyping the Klingons. I mean, maybe they're into rap. Maybe they're like opera.
They do have Klingon opera as well.
Yes. Do they?
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Yep. I think like Klingon operas have actually been written by fans as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they premiered this video this week, there was actually a whole groundswell. But the next thing they do on this has to be a Klingon opera, believe it or not.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, because the whole reason that they did this was that the game itself is wrapping up a year of Klingon, so to speak, a year of Klingon-centric updates. Because for the longest time, the Klingon faction was the secondary faction in the game, and nobody really played it because there was a number of technical reasons why it was more difficult to, but over the last year, they've brought it up on par to the Federation side. So for anybody who is a fan of the Klingons, you can just jump straight in when you make your Star Trek Online account. And that storyline has been concluding, and this music video is, I guess you could say, the ultimate in forms of that kind of conclusion. So there'll be a link in the show notes to this at update.rsvmb.com. But overall, they did a very good job with this. And yes, this was actually sanctioned by CBS, believe it or not.
Wow.
Because everything they do for that game has to be okayed by CBS.
So, who could say no to this, honestly?
Right?
It's beautiful.
And just the fact that the actor from the show was able to do this and put the time into this for the folks at Cryptic really just speaks to how much that, she has come into that character. So definitely give this a watch. Does it make you want to, either of you want to play a Klingon on Star Trek Online at all?
No, but I'm glad you said it was her, because I could like picture her singing it.
Right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know Laurel, right? From season 1 and 2 of Discovery. Had a very rough time with some of the characters in season 1, but that's beside the point. Let's move on to your pick of the week, Questscaping. We have another YouTube video here.
Yes, I basically already also have a music video going on here, but it's an unconventional music video. You see, I've always liked music visualizations as a sort of audio-visual experience to the music. And what this person has done, so the creator is someone with synesthesia. And so they experience some senses combined. So what they're saying in the video description is, I experience music as a 3D environment with texture, mass, weight, and movement.
I've heard of people who can do that, but I've never imagined what that would be like.
Well, this is what that video is for. It's Daft Punk's Alive 2007 album as a visualization. It's an entire 3D graphics project, and it's really well done. It's
there's lots of flashing. It's kind of hard on the eyes for anybody who is.
Yeah. Definitely a very well-merited warning there.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of different sections. You can see the amount of effort that went into it. There's 3D graphics that are really rather complex and only appear for 2 seconds and are not reused at all. That's the level of detail that has gone into this. And there's also timestamps in the video, so you can skip to different parts. Some are not so impressive, but some are really in-depth.
Oh, wow, it's an hour and 24 minutes long.
Yeah, so it's a massive project. My favorite section is the burning / too long section.
All right.
And, yeah, it's... So for people with sort of sensory... I don't know what to say. Sensory conditions, I guess, like synesthesia or anything related... I don't think I quite have synesthesia, but I do experience certain sensory things that really made this video quite an experience for me, just really hitting parts of my brain that I didn't quite realize could be hit like that, sort of connecting with it in a certain level. I've sent it to various friends and got comments like, I can feel this in my teeth. I feel like I'm flying. I can't bear to watch this for more than a few minutes on end because it's really good, but it's overwhelmingly so.
Yeah, I'm already seeing that this might be overwhelming on my end as well for this. And I'm playing it without the sound here just so we don't get copyright hit.
Yeah. I've also sent it to a friend with synesthesia, and who has said, wow, I've never actually seen synesthesia represented before. This is kind of incredible.
That's really interesting because, you know, I always imagined that this would affect a very, very tiny, tiny part of the population to the point where nobody would really understand it, of course. But as with anything on the internet, there's always something for everyone. In terms of anyone being able to feel comfortable however they are.
Yeah.
So that's interesting from that perspective too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Bringing together communities in a way you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know what you would take from this, Tanis, because there's lots of colors involved, so it might be interesting you to watch as well from the colorblindness angle.
Well, I did find something to take away. I thought this was only in... I didn't know it could happen naturally, and I didn't know it could happen permanently. I thought this was a temporary thing that could happen from copious amounts of hallucinogens.
Right.
So that's the only time I've ever heard of the condition. So I actually did learn something. Plus, I love Daft Punk, so hey, might as well check it out.
Well, win-win on all fronts then.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to achievements. Start us off, Tanis.
All right, so... Starting off, we have Tanny Keat with 99 Herb Lore on August 4th. Then we have D3X1 Ion? Dexian, maybe?
Whatever works. I'm not sure how to pronounce
that.
Yeah,
something like that. 99 Smithing on August the 3rd. We have Zazakan with 120 Invention on August 3rd. And Jujumakin with 99 Farming on August 2nd.
Nicely done. Next up, we have Brewski 17 with 99 Farming on August 1st. Jade Gizmo got 99 Archaeology on July 31st. River Design with 99 Strength on the 30th. And Sethroth with 99 Slayer on the 30th.
Okay, last but not least, we have Aleo Sith, 99 Farming on July the 29th. Also on that day, Avocadone got 120 Herblore. And Chimney Lax got 99 Mining. Well done, all.
Nicely done. Nicely done, everyone. And that concludes this show, but we're also going to figure out what we've been up to here, because it wouldn't be an update episode without talking about what we've been doing on RuneScape, of course. So let's start with you, Tanis. What you been up to this week?
Briefly messed with the Slayer with the nod on, and then just to check it out, and then quickly pretty much came to gathering my energy and making my charges. It's turned into like a habit. I don't know. I just like to peacefully sit and listen to a book and just touch the little whisk. I don't know. It used to seem like a chore, and then it seemed like a moneymaker, and now it has turned into something that I like. Actually just want to do.
Yeah. So, yeah. I know I do that on mobile from time to time. Pretty good moneymaker. Are you doing incandescence or luminous, or which ones are you doing?
Incandescence. I was trying to make that artifact that was so wonderful, and then I made a wingsuit, and then you had to go to another island to get the second part of the wingsuit,
right?
So you get the third one, so you get the thing for the artifact, and I think it's accessibility related, but I keep getting knocked out of this guy, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
All right.
So I went back to the Divine Omatic and said, well, let's make charges.
All right. Sounds good. As for me this week, I did take another trip to Carapac on Saturday and on Sunday. And after the podcast was done on Thursday, I got a pair of the gloves, which sold for about 15 mil. That was my only real notable drop from Carapac. Funny story about that. I brought Sirion into that fight because I needed someone to take pictures while I was fighting. And it was the fight that he was in there that I actually got the gloves, and he didn't get anything of note. We did get the kill, but he didn't get anything of note there with that. But, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but I truly did enjoy a PVM update.
Here we are. What a world.
Yeah. But ever since then, I have been just herb farming because, you know, I make everything myself, and the fun part about this note on front week is that every piece of potion and food I used, I caught myself. I didn't buy any of it. I've made it through various yak tracks and double XPs and whatnot. So this week I've been farming quorum to make more quorum poison incense sticks, because I have a feeling I'll be needing those in the future. I've also, since I took up this... note on front number one, I've been doing daily backriminal bolts as well, because I have a stack of close to 1,000 rubies and dragon stones in my bank, and those are, you know, useful for when you're making bolts. So I've been doing that sort of thing as well, but that's what I've been up to on RS with a bit of dungeoneering hole aside. I think I mentioned last week that I got 117 from the hole, so there's that. How about you, Questscaping?
I've been killing Carapac a bunch. It's a nice group for bringing friends to.
Yeah.
Nice boss for that.
Yeah. It's honestly at the point where it's still a nice challenge that if you bring three people who are, you know, beginner to intermediate PVM, you can have a bit of a challenge to it, but you're not going to get your teeth smacked in as long as you're all paying attention to it. And you can still have some fun banter along the side. So I think that for me, it's right where we want it. And I know we had a huge discussion at the roundtable about what beginner truly is, and that sparked open a whole new other set of ideas on this. So it's been really fun. But anything else?
Not really. It's taught a few friends how to do it. And apart from that, a lot of the RuneScape stuff I do is outside the game. So I'm pretty active in the RuneScape art community. There's been a art fight event going on that's actually received a shout out in the official RuneScape news posts, where everyone's gearing up to draw as many things for opposing artists as possible.
Nice.
And that's been quite an explosion of art at the moment, so I'm doing my best to keep up with that.
Alrighty. Well, I think that pretty much wraps this episode of RSBNB Update. If you guys want to subscribe to the podcast, you can get it on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, anywhere you find your podcast. Also, of course, YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Every like and subscribe there helps with channel visibility. Like and share the nibbles. We'll have some good ones coming from this week. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update and the resumption of RuneScape Updates. So until then, take care, everyone. See you then.
Bye-bye.